That makes a gross noise when you step on it. Unsquish the Fish with your host, Ron Caniff.
Hey, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode of Unsquish the Fish. Appreciate the support. Appreciate the downloads. Like all the social interaction, having fun on Facebook, having now some fun on Twitter as well as I try to get into the Twitter world a little bit more. Sorry I am a bit late on this episode, on vacation last week, and if you could hear in my voice, I got a teeny bit of a cold I'm fighting, but not going to let it stop me from doing an episode. As promised, I've been teasing a little bit about this Deflategate and some of these statistics, and let me tell you how this came about to the point where I actually wanted to mainly do an episode about it. Now, after I talk about the Deflategate, I want to talk a little bit about this contract offer we did for the defensive tackle Mosley from Detroit, as well as want to talk a little bit about the Parker injury and perhaps some about the expectations of the team this year, but mostly we're going to talk about the Deflategate stats. I recalled one time listening to the radio right around the time the Deflategate stuff broke out, not during the championship game, but after the Wells report came out. And I heard someone on the radio, I believe it was a former player, just kind of half mentioned that a deflated ball is a little easier to hang on to, which was an angle in Deflategate not talked about and I never thought about. Of course, it was all about what's the advantage Tom Brady gained from it? What were his statistics blown up? Was he making plays he wouldn't have made? I don't know if that is even quantifiable. I don't know if we'll ever really know that. So the interesting part about the statistics I'm going to be giving you is they have nothing to do with Tom Brady's stats. Now, granted, the rule change that happened to allow the offense to just use their own ball, whether they were on the road or at home, did happen in 2007 when he blew up. There's no denying that, but I think there was a lot of circumstances that went around that beyond that. Perhaps it played a part in it. It's the fumbling part that's interesting to me. And so you ask, so what's the big deal? Okay, well, obviously, you probably don't ask what's the big deal because you watch football and you know that turnovers are pretty key to the wins and loss of a team. But this angle has not been talked about in the media. They really, you'd have to listen to a whole lot of radio. I mean, I heard one mention from one person or watch a whole lot of television. One mention from one person says something about the word fumbling. So I'm on Facebook, as I am all the time, in one of the groups, and I belong to tons of different Dolphins groups, but I also belong to a few of these Smack Talk groups. And I made this stupid little meme. I don't even remember what it was. Something about not being a crybaby. I just hate losing to cheaters. So it was something like that, putting like a cry face of Brady. It was something dumb. And somebody said something that just kind of get in my craw. Now, you don't know me well, but I'm prone to ranting, that's for sure. And I am an emotional person. Like, for instance, last week I had a person on, Oscar Hazel, very smart and intelligent about football. He lives in the UK, but he grew up around European NFL. He knows he has forgotten more about football than I'll ever know. So if you're looking for statistical, straightforward analysis information, he's your guy. If you want total emotional overreaction, well, I'm your guy. That's me. I overreact to everything. I will admit it. I'm a crybaby about my Dolphins. I will also admit it. So somebody said something that kind of stuck in my craw. So I thought, I'm going to dig a little bit into this fumble thing. And normally when I think I'm going to see something, when I'm generally digging into some random NFL.com statistics, nothing really amazingly scientific about it, I never usually find what I think I'm looking for. But in this case, I did. So, as you know, or you may not know, the rule was changed for the 2007 season to allow the offenses to use their own ball, whether at home or on the road. And I found that interesting. Obviously, it was Brady who was at the forefront of that, along with Peyton Manning. Now, they did a petition. This is the most information I could find when I dug deeper. There was a petition. 20 quarterbacks signed it. I couldn't figure out the list of the 20 quarterbacks. I mean, it was a long time ago. I wasn't able to dig that far. But 20 quarterbacks. And obviously, Brady was the one who really wanted this rule. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to look at the fumbling stats of the Patriots starting in 2007 just to see where we're at. So let's see how much of an advantage they really gained from this. I expected to maybe see some advantage, but nothing that would jump off the page. Holy crap, jump off the page it did. From 2007 to 2014, every single year, they were a top five in fumbling. When I say top five, meaning obviously the least amount of fumbles. The probability of that isn't real great. Let's just face it. Fumbles are just one of those obscure things. They just happen. It all kind of averages out. It all kind of evens out. But for some reason, the Patriots, year in and year out, from 2007 on, right after the rule change, were able to be first, third, fourth, first. And they had this one year they were 24th. And I'm actually about to explain what happened that year, because I noticed that. I remember Ridley had a bad year. And I think I mentioned a few episodes ago, I'd hate to have Ridley on my team, because if he couldn't hold on to a deflated ball, I'd like to see what he's going to do when it's full, because the guy fumbles a lot. So I went on this big rant on Facebook, and I posted this just ridiculously. In all the Smack Talk leagues, I didn't post it in any of the Dolphins stuff. In any of the Dolphins groups, I should say. But in the Smack Talk groups, I did. I went and it was a ridiculously long rant of a post that you had to hit the continue button to read. And I just gave every stat I could find. I also added in there what I found interesting was on NFL.com, I could look back all the way to 2003. And before the rule change, they were in the teens every time, 12th, 13th, 14th, 13th, in those range rather for those 4 years. And where you would expect a pretty good coach team to be, like in the middle or around the middle, kind of just staying in the middle, it makes sense to me. They're not, now mind you, dome teams fumble less because of weather. Good weather teams fumble less. Those are just statistics over the years. It's the way it is. So not only is it amazing they would stay so high for so long, but to do it outside in an outdoor stadium in poor weather conditions many a times was just through the roof. Once I did this post, it was just crickets for a while. First of all, it was a long post. I'm sure a lot of people just didn't even feel like reading it. And it took hours, pretty much, for any reaction. I think the Patriots fans were letting that soak in a little bit. But it gets so much deeper than that. And I'm about to tell you why. So as there's a lot of back and forth on it, a guy named Pete Contacos, I actually have his name spelled out phonetically, he spelled it for me so I know how to pronounce it. He's on Facebook, Pete Contacos. He's admins a group called Smack Talking Sports that I'm in. I like it. It's a little smaller, but it's fun. Everybody in it's pretty active, and I've been in groups that have 20,000 people, but you can look and see the activity isn't there from 20,000 people. This is one of those groups that's small, but a lot of back and forth with a lot of different. Mostly, it seems like it's been taken over by Patriots and Dolphins fans, which of course makes it very interesting and made it very interesting for this. So he posts in there after some back and forth. You know, he may have a point. If they've been able to keep their fumbles down by, in essence, cheating or through outside influences other than just basic probability, that really goes a long way to their win percentage. And he posted this article he found. Now, I want to give all the credit in the world to this website, Sharp Football Analysis. It's sharpfootballanalysis.com. I worked hard to try and get this person, Warren Sharp, who wrote the article, I will assume this is his site, on the show, and I just couldn't connect with him. So I'm going to read this article word for word. And I still want you to go, and it's an article from May 7th, and I will continuously tweet the link so that you can go straight to the article as well after I post the episode so that you can read it for yourself, because I'm going to read it word for word, but there are a couple charts on here. And the charts took me a minute to sink in, but once you read everything with the context, you understand the charts. Why this hasn't been covered by the mainstream media, I have no idea. I have my theories. I am a little bit of a conspiracy theory guy, a conspiracy theory person, I would say. And I'll give those to you after the show. After I read the article. While speculation exists that Deflategate was a one-time occurrence, data I introduced last week indicated that the phenomenon may have been ongoing, long-standing issue for the New England Patriots. Today, that possibility looks clear as day. Initially, looking at weather data, I noticed the Patriots performed extremely well in the rain, much more so than they were projected. I followed that up by looking at the fumble data, which showed regardless of weather or site, the Patriots' prevention of fumbles was nearly impossible. Ironically, both studies saw the same exact starting point. 2007 was the first season where things really changed for the Patriots. Something started in 2007, which is still ongoing today. I wanted to compare the New England Patriots' fumble rate from 2000, when head coach Bill Belichick first arrived in New England, to the rest of the NFL. Clearly, one thing I found in my prior research was that dome teams fumble substantially less frequently, given they play at least 8-plus games out of the elements each year. To keep every team on a more level playing field, I eliminated dome teams from the analysis, grabbed only regular season games, and defined plays as pass attempts and rushes and time sacks. So what he's saying is all the plays he's saying are either pass attempts, rushes, or time sacks. That's pretty much all the plays that are not on special teams. The below results also look only at total fumbles, not just fumbles which are lost. This brought us to the ability to capture touches per fumble. To really confirm something was dramatically different in New England, starting in 2007 through present, I compared the 2000 through 2006 time period when Bill Belichick was their head coach and they won all their Super Bowls to the 2007 and 2000 to 2014 time period. The beauty of data is the results speak for themselves. Now, I'm looking at a chart here, and it's hard for me to describe, but pretty much you see the 2000 through 2006, and you see him, as I said, just looking at what I saw, pretty much right in the middle. If you look at this graph, they're just right in the middle of the pack. Makes sense for a well-coached team, outdoors, bad weather conditions, especially during winter times. It would make sense they would be in the middle, that, for me. But then when you look at the 2007 through 2014, they're off the chart, pretty much. They're so far away from all the other teams, it's not even really feasible that they could do that just through coaching. And I'll explain why as I continue to read this. The data is jaw-dropping, and this visual perfectly depicts what happens. From a more technical perspective, John Candidito, a data scientist at Zest Finance, who is a colleague of mine over at the NFLproject.com website, and was also involved in the development of this research, comments, based on the assumption that plays per fumble follow a normal distribution, you'd expect to see, according to random fluctuation, the results that the Patriots have gotten since 2007 once in 5,842 instances. Which, in layman's terms, means that this result only being a coincidence is like winning a raffle where you have a 0.00017111874 probability to win. In other words, it's very unlikely that results this abnormal are only due to indigenous nature of the game. Many of the arguments giving the Patriots the benefit of the doubt are evaporating. While this data does not prove they deflated football starting in 2007, we know they were interested in obtaining that ability in 2006. This is something I found out after I performed the first two analyses, both of which independently found that something changed starting in 2007. In 2006, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning lobbied in favor of changing an NFL rule, and as a result, the NFL agreed to change policies. Brady wanted the NFL to let every team provide its own footballs to use on offense, even when the team was playing on the road. Prior to that year, the home team provided all the footballs, meaning the home quarterback selected the footballs the road quarterback would play with on offense. Brady's quote at the time, when pushing for the change was, "The thing is, every quarterback likes it a little bit different. Some like them blown up a little bit more. Some like them a little bit more thin. Some like them a little more new. Some like them really broken in." Obviously, this information was combined with the data above is exceedingly compelling. Not only can you visually see the change when aggregating the data into periods of 2006 2000 through 2006 and 2007 through 2014, you can clearly see how it occurs on the following two graphs. The data is the same, but details are added in the second graph to provide additional information and context. And like I said, when you go to the link, you'll see the graphs. Once again, a key takeaway is deadly obvious. Prior to 2007, the Patriots were right in line with the league averages across the other non-dome teams. When you look team by team, they literally are in the middle of the pack for most seasons. As the histogram in the very first graphic at the top of this article shows, but starting in 2007, all similarities totally vanish. The statistical jump the Patriots make in the 2006 offseason from one fumble every 39 plays to one fumble every 76 plays is nothing short of remarkable. Their trend line over this period is not even close to that of the rest of the NFL. The 2013 season is an oddity in that the Patriots were actually slightly worse than the rest of the NFL. Looking at that season, it's apparent the reason. Of the Patriots' 23 fumbles that season, 6 over 25% occurred in one Sunday night game versus Broncos played in 22-degree weather with 22-mile-per-hour winds and a wind chill of 6 degrees. Cold conditions of this nature absolutely caused more fumbles than usual. They fumbled a total of 5 times in 11 of their 16 games in 2013, 69% of their total games. So it truly was this week 12 Antarctic game and a week 17 game versus the Bills which saw 4 fumbles, which really put the Patriots' fumble rate for the 2013 out of sync. This is exactly why looking at small sample sets such as single seasons is not the preferred manner to investigate this analysis. Why are fumbles so important? Because as Bill Belichick knows, perhaps more so than most NFL coaches due to his understanding of the game, turnovers usually control game outcomes. Since 2007, teams who won the turnover battle won 79% of their games, regardless of any other statistic. That is one of the biggest things, and that is the part of this article, and I'll stop reading for a second, that sticks in my craw. 79% of games, regardless of any other statistic. Think about that. No matter what else the other team was doing, what else they were doing, who cared what. They were winning games because they didn't fumble, and they didn't fumble because they were deflating the freaking ball. It's pretty obvious. I'm going to continue to read. A 12-5 record equates to 75% wins, so it's clear how vital turnovers are in the minds of intelligent coaches. And as far as turnovers are concerned, the number one concern for a team with a quarterback as skilled and proficient as Tom Brady is not interceptions, because there won't be many. It's fumbles. There are many arguments which have been raised in favor of why the Patriots don't fumble as often as other teams. I love some of this stuff. I love the way he debunks this stuff. It's so great. So much better than I could have even said it. Many of them are simply factually incorrect. If it was coaching, former players should be able to tell us that Bill Belichick suddenly and drastically changed the way he instructed players to carry the football in 2006 offseason. But the data shows that if mysterious trade secret was delivered, the players forgot about it when they left New England, as their individual fumble rates became drastically worse when playing for other NFL teams. Hashtag Stephen Ridley. The bottom line is, Stephen Ridley wasn't in the article. Okay, just thought I'd throw that out there. The bottom line is, something happened in New England. It happened just before the 2007 season, and it completely changed this team. While NFL teams apparently are complaining to the league that they felt the Patriots played with deflated footballs during the 2014 season and postseason, all investigations into those allegations would be wise to reference my research herein and begin the investigation in the 2006 season. That was when Tom Brady was able to persuade the NFL to change its rules to allow him and other quarterbacks to provide their own footballs for all road games. I will reiterate, this analysis cannot say it was undoubtedly illegal football deflation which caused the data abnormalities, but it does conclude that something absolutely changed and it was not the result of simple random fluctuation. There you go. I don't know why they're not just running with this story. This why no one else is saying anything about this? Why this article is just pretty much hidden? Yeah, it's out there on the internet, but nobody's running with this information or collecting their own? Does the fact that ESPN plays NFL games has a huge connection with the NFL and the NFL is begging? No, you're not giving them out this information. You're not beating this up in the media. It's not happening. It's not going to happen. And if ESPN doesn't do it, you know NFL Network's not going to do it. I mean, that's pretty much where you go. That's what you have right there. But when Robert Kraft sat down with the commissioner, you wonder if maybe some of this stuff maybe came up, and that's why they decided, you know what? We're just going to take our $1 million penalty, which he actually gets off because if he's not paying Brady the first four games, or even, say, the first two games, then he comes out ahead, so who really cares about the $1 million fine? I'll take my two picks penalty and be on my way, thanks. I don't know if this will have any influence with the Brady scenario, which we still don't know yet, and we probably won't know till the end of the month or early July. Did Brady know this would be the unintended benefit of deflating the balls just because that's the way he liked them a little bit? I really don't think so. Did Belichick know they were deflating? Before I saw these statistics, I thought no. I really felt like he didn't know, and I kind of still feel that he didn't know. Perhaps he just thought he was really doing a bang-up job of coaching. You think the NFL doesn't have these statistics? There's no way. The way the NFL keeps statistics, the way they analyze every single thing you could imagine, yeah, they know this information. It's pretty obvious to them as well, and they don't want it talked about. And I'm sure, I would imagine ESPN agreed to not blow this up. But I'm telling you, if somebody went and just took this article, or like I said, go collect your own data, and read that off, and said this, and beat this up just for a day, it would infuriate NFL fans. It would cause, because they were bucking the odds. And when you talk about Vegas getting involved and the wise guys getting involved in odds bucking, I'm curious to know if the wise guys knew, if the people who set the lines in Vegas had this information, and what those lines, will this affect the way they do things from here on out? I mean, it's extremely compelling information. And again, I want to say sharpfootballanalysis.com, Warren Sharp. I don't know him, never met him, never had any contact with him. Like I said, I tried to get him on the show. I wasn't able to get in touch with him at all. I really wanted to talk to him about it. As a Dolphins fan, which I would assume that most of you listening are, I mean, you just got to be ticked off. We're in their division. We can't catch a break. Well, yeah, we don't have Brady. We haven't been the best team. But when you look at all the other divisions, I mean, there's a rotation going on. Even when there's good teams in the division, you still see teams coming up and down, fighting for it. I mean, they've won the division like 12 out of 13 times or something. No freaking wonder. No wonder, man. Are you kidding me? It's ridiculous. I just hope that... I'm curious to see what the numbers will look like, and you're not going to be able to tell from one season. They may still have a decent fumbling season or not, but I'm curious to see what the numbers will look like over the next 3, 4, 5 years. If we see then that them go to just average fumbling right in the middle, right where you expect a well-coached team to be, and they are a well-coached team, and yes, Brady is a good quarterback, and I hate saying all that, but it's the truth. But as I said at the beginning of the show, really not sure about the true benefit of what it gave Brady. Obviously, he was more comfortable with it, but we saw him in the second half when the balls were replaced with full balls of the AFC Championship game. We saw him just go ham on the Colts. So I don't know how much it really affected him or will affect him in the future. But this fumbling statistic, which has not been talked about at all, that's really the key. I mean, that stat, 79% win percentage when you win the turnover battle, regardless of any other statistic. That is huge. Just absolutely huge. I thought it needed to be said. For the listeners I have, tell everybody. And this isn't just for my show, because I want my show to blow up and everybody to know about it. I would just tell everybody to go to the site and read this damn article. It's inarguable. I'm telling you, even if you're a Patriots fan, if you sit down and you read that, you realize they were deflating balls since 2007, period, end of story, and they were gaining a huge advantage from that as a team. It's mind-blowing. Anyway, I'm glad I finally got the opportunity to say that. I'd been wanting to do that for like a week and a half. That article's been out since May 7th. But one thing or another, I haven't been able to get to it. All right, I do want to talk about some a couple Dolphins things. I found it interesting yesterday. I'm recording this on Wednesday, the whatever it is, 10th, 11th. I'm not even sure the date. That we are trying to sign another defensive tackle. His name's C.J. Mosley, not to be confused with the C.J. Mosley from Baltimore. But I don't know why, except for the fact that perhaps there's somebody, there's some defensive tackles on the team maybe they're not happy with. Now, whether that's a depth thing or whether that's Earl Mitchell, I'm not really sure which it is. I hear some chatter about them maybe not really super happy with Phillips' development. I mean, the guy's only been on the team like a few weeks, really. I don't think it's that. I'm wondering, are they not super happy with Earl Mitchell? I don't know if Mosley's really starting caliber, but I know he's played a lot. He is a veteran. Maybe they just feel they need one more veteran on there because if, say, let's say something happens with Earl Mitchell and he's out a game, and now you're rotating in either a rookie or a bunch of second year guys. It is young behind Mitchell and Sue, so it could just be that. That makes sense to me. But I don't know. We'll see. We know Earl Mitchell was part of that defensive line last year that failed us in the last six games. And he was just, as far as that interior goes. So maybe they're just seeing the same play they saw from him last year in those last six games, and they're not ecstatic about it. It's hard to know. They've offered him the contract. He says, or his agent says, that he has a few others. So by the time you hear this, he may have been signed here or somewhere else. So I think it's less important about whether he signs or not signs, and more important as to the reasons why they would do it. That won't change regardless of signing or not signing as far as what their reasons are at this point. Now, I do want to rant, not rant, although I am prone to rants. I do want to talk a little bit about the Parker injury. I think it's being a little underplayed because everybody's like, oh, he'll be there for week one. But he's a rookie. And he's missing part of OTAs. He's missing minicamp. He's going to miss the beginning of training camp, likely. That means something for a rookie sometimes more than it means for a fifth or sixth year vet. I mean, they know the ropes. He doesn't know the ropes yet, and he's missing a lot of that learning on the field. Yeah, he'll still be in the classroom. He'll be on the sideline taking those mental reps, as they say. I get all that. But I'm a little concerned that it's going to stunt him a little bit, at least at the beginning of the season. Now, we saw Odell Beckham Jr. just go off, and he missed, like, I don't know how many, the first half of the season or something, and he just came in and he just went right to it. So I'm hopeful that Parker can do the same, but I do have some concerns, and there's no way you can't tell me that he's not missing something, that he's not going to be just maybe mentally, I'm not even talking physically, I'm not even speaking of the physical part of the game, I'm speaking of all the mental stuff right now, that mentally he's not missing something from this off-season work that he's going to be out of. I would be surprised to see him now starting week one when I thought it was kind of looking that way. Now, I know it's only a few OTAs, but he was looking pretty ridiculous. Maybe he'll come back in and he'll look just as ridiculous and he'll have some preseason games to prove that he can be a starter, because I really want this guy on the field as much as possible. I know you do. I think he will help Tannehill tremendously, especially in the red zone. And that's where we need the most help. Because last year, I mean, we could get to the red zone. We were the number one team in trips to the red zone in the NFL. Just couldn't finish it off. Now I do want to speak a little bit before we go. And I know this show is a little bit shorter than most, but I'm actually going to be doing another show tomorrow. And I'll have that out by the weekend. So I'm giving you two this week. And that's about the expectations of the season. They are growing tremendously. And the more we watch our team on the field in OTAs, and we don't watch, we read, I suppose, the greater those expectations are getting. I mean, we're seeing Tannehill. I mean, every year he's gotten better, and I don't expect this year to be any different. We see these new receivers. I mean, got to be excited about these receivers. A question mark for us was the cornerback spot, not beyond Grimes. Yeah, we still don't know who the starter is, but boy, there are candidates, and there are candidates looking strong. Not, oh, this guy's going to take it because there's nobody else, but whoever gets that spot will have earned it with talent and good play. That's what you want, not got it by proxy because everybody else stunk. And I know that I believe it was Oscar Hazel said in the previous show that Will Davis may not even make this team, or maybe he had said it on one of his other shows. I personally just disagree with that. I think Will Davis is a player, and I think he's going to be on this team. I think he has a chance to even take that spot. We're going to see. But between the two McCains, Jamar Taylor, Will Davis, and now Tony Lippett, who we wondered why are you drafting a wide receiver to be a cornerback? I mean, the guy is making plays. And the media folk are saying, you know what, we're seeing it over and over again. It's not just luck. There's a reason why he's doing well. He's talented. So I'm feeling great about our whole defensive backfield. I think the depth there is getting amazing. You see Walt Akins, and I spoke about Walt Akins, I think, episode one. I'm excited about him. You see him playing well. You got Michael Thomas out there. Delmas is in the fold, obviously. I mean, Delmas is going to be likely the starter. I obviously still have concerns about this interior O-line. I have this feeling that at the end of minicamp, they're going to go do a Darren College-type signing. Obviously not him, he's retired, but something like that. They're going to go get a guard or two. I know that they're going against a tough D-line, and that's supposed to make them better, but we've had a tough D-line for years, and we've been saying for years, oh, that D-line's going to make our O-line better, and it never works. It never happens. So I'm not even saying that or thinking that anymore, and I think everybody just needs to get that out of their head because that just doesn't seem to be the case. You're either talented or you're not. And I think right now we have some question marks as to the talent level of some of these guards. We just do. Now, a little bit of bad guard play shouldn't stop a really good team. It hasn't stopped other really good teams. But you want everything. As a fan, you want everything clicking. You don't want any question marks at any position. Not realistic, I assume, but you're hoping that they fix every single thing they can fix. And it seems to me like they're going for this year. Yeah, they've made a lot of moves. Yeah, they've got a lot of youth and a lot of talent. A lot of young guys. But they're talented. They're not just there because they're young. They're there because they're good. I'm excited about this year. I still have the same expectations. My expectations have not gone down. They've even maybe gone up since before the draft, before free agency. All right, so it was a shorter show today. I got another show I'm recording tomorrow, so I'm giving you two this week. I appreciate it. Sorry for my voice being a little out of it. Coughing a little bit, but I'm still a little under the weather. Like everybody who goes on vacation, you always come back with something besides dirty clothes. And in this case, I came back with a cold. If you want to tweet the show at Unsquish the Fish or follow the Facebook page, it's Unsquish the Fish. You can find me on Facebook, Ron Caniff, that's CANNIFF. If you'd like to just friend request me, I will say yes, of course. If you did want to email any questions, comments, concerns, thoughts, unsquishthefish@gmail.com or at yahoo.com. I appreciate all the support. I appreciate all the listens. It's been magnificent. A lot of people from other countries download it. And it's not just luck. Because I see, when I say it's not just luck, it's not just one download. I see several countries that download multiple times. The UK, which that's kind of expected. Japan. It's definitely a military base. I know I mentioned it before, but thanks, you guys. I really appreciate the support. It's awesome. Again, I said this before. If you want to email the show, I'll do a shout out to somebody out here. Go ahead. I'll do that for you. Germany. I'm not sure if that's a military base or not, but lots of downloads out of Germany. I'm covering most of the United States now. California's big. I mean, there's Dolphins fans everywhere. They're all over the place. They're transplanted all over the world, obviously. So I appreciate the support, guys. Have a great day. I'll see you real soon.